It's a great pleasure for me to be here and be introduced by Dallas, whom I've known since 1968. Although, like many other people, he's a very clever fellow. I was tricked into coming to Regina. You understand, it was a bit of a shock to go to Regina from San Diego, California. He put an ad in the New York Review of Books and told some just blatant lies about the climate. And by the time we all got there, though of course the fall is nice, it was too late to do anything about it. But I wasn't sorry after all. It was a good place to spend 5 years. I hope that some people have not been scared away by the title of this talk, which I think is a bit pretentious, but we wanted to get a lot of things into it. I'll try to simplify it, and because it's not all that complicated. It arises out of some aspects of the book which Dallas mentions, which was just published by University of Toronto Press, called The Limits to Satisfaction. And it deals with the theory of human needs. Beyond that, I've been working with a colleague who is a communication specialist in the Faculty of Environmental Studies at York on a study called Lifestyle Imagery and Advertising. It was funded by the Federal Department of Consumer and Corporate Affairs. And that is just getting underway. So I want to explore a little bit about both the theoretical and the practical everyday life side of these matters. It's probably obvious that marketplace goods are forms of interpersonal communications for us today. They've been for a long time. Fashion, trends, symbols of success. In the swinging set, for example, in the freewheeling mating processes, which are akin to the display rituals of other social animals, we communicate through the things we wear and the things we buy and the things we use. This aspect of the recent marketplace is probably best analyzed by French theorists like Debord, like Barthes, like Baudrillard. But you have people, in fact, here who can tell you more about them than I can. They often, so far, the analysis which has come out of this French school, I think, remains on the surface of things. They talk about they try to penetrate this glitter of the marketplace, but they never get really very far into it. They never really get down into what I would call the muck of industrial society, into the relationship between all this glitter on the one hand and the incredible amounts of residuals, of chemical wastes, pollutants, and so on, that is the price that in fact nature pays for this way of addressing our needs. And they never in fact really talk about this aspect of the problem at all, about our relation to nature, and specifically our increasing perception of nature as simply a means for our ends, as raw materials for our needs, and as dumping ground for our wastes. But this is just by way of introduction. I don't really want to talk about esoteric French theorists, of which many of you are not familiar in any case. I want to just outline why I thought it was necessary to develop a new theory of human needs for contemporary society, and do it very briefly. There are two basic deficiencies in the theories of needs that one encounters mostly in social science today, in social psychology, sociology, economics. Anthropology is probably the best of all of these disciplines. And I'll speak here, use as an example the most famous of these schemas, which is Abraham Maslow, the social psychologist, the five-level hierarchy of needs. I won't even bother to go through it. It starts with existence needs, the famous trinity of food, shelter, and clothing, and goes up to self-actualization. Or sociology will speak usually of basic human needs and give a list starting with food and so on, socialization needs. And I think there is a fundamental defect in that, in the kind of abstraction which is used there, namely that it has no reference to the other side of the problem of needs, which is the way in which needs are satisfied. It assumes implicitly that that is not important, that there is a structure of needs which we can talk about without talking about the ways in which we try to satisfy them. It assumes that that is a matter of indifference. It doesn't matter whether you have, apparently from Maslow's scheme, whether you have what we call a primitive society or an advanced industrial society, the hierarchy of needs is the same. And at the very least, I think one could say about this, the point is not argued. Secondly, and something very important to me in the context of where I work in the Faculty of Environmental Studies, the theories of needs ignore entirely and universally an entire dimension, namely our relation to non-human nature. The theory of needs talk about the needs of humans as individuals for survival and of humans as members of social groups, as socialization needs. We need ways to get along with each other. But except for anthropology, with reference to primitive peoples, where they talk about the relationship between their culture and their conceptions of nature, this is never mentioned. Now, there is a reason for that, which I won't go into, namely that we believe it's not a problem for us since we've conquered nature. We don't have to deal with nature. That, I think, is wrong. That, I tried to show, is wrong in the first book I wrote that Dallas mentioned, that whatever science and technology does for us, we do not conquer nature. Those are the two deficiencies I see in the standard social science treatment of the problem of needs. On the other side, we have we call, for want of a better word, the radical theory of needs coming out of Marxism, but there are many, many variations of it. This is the well-known concept of commodity fetishism. I can state what I think is wrong with that very simply, is that since it was first enunciated by Marx in Capital in 1867, the notion is simply lain dormant, never been developed. Nobody ever said, well, what is commodity fetishism? What does it really mean? What happens in Marxism generally is you get a simple repetition over and over again. It's the capitalist society, the society of commodity fetishism, and everybody supposedly knows what that means, but it's actually a conspiracy of silence because I imagine that no one really does. Secondly, in radical theory, in the revisionist tendencies of radical theory, for example, in the Frankfurt School of Marcuse and so on, and I speak here with great humility since he was my teacher, but we fundamentally disagree on this point, Eric Fromm and Marcuse developed a theory of distinguishing between true and false needs, that there are some needs which reflect the authentic impulses of individuals, and there are some needs which are sort of forced on people by the marketplace, by the structure of capitalist production. The former are true needs, and the latter are false needs. And our problem is how to get rid of the latter and retain the former.